Good morning, everyone. It is 9:30 a.m., January 20th, 2023. I'm Randy Christman, Chair of the Public Service Commission, joined by Commissioners Sherry Haugen-Hoffert, joining remotely, and Julie Fedorchak in the room, so we have a quorum. This is a work session on the Montana Dakota Utilities Company Applied Blockchain Dickey County Public Convenience and Necessity, and it's two cases, cases number PU-22-370 and PU-22-366. Sherry, did you have any opening comments, or are you ready to kick it over to staff to kind of update us on where we're at?
No, the only thing I have to say is thank you to staff for, I appreciate keeping this moving along, and I'll kick it over to you, Jack, for presentation, and then I'll ask Randy just to lead the meeting, read the room, and moving the discussion along. So thank you, Chairman Christman.
Okay, and did you have any comments?
I don't. I have thoughts, but I'm going to wait until we get further in.
Okay, I'll turn it over to you, Jack.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Commissioner. I did ask for a work session, and if you recall, in the past I had some discussions about trying to move our cases along a little more quickly, especially with legislative session going on. Scheduling gets tough, things have a tendency to get hung up a little bit, and so I did want to call this one, but before we start moving into, I guess, the order that was provided, and I know clearly none of you have had the opportunity to take a peek at it because I just provided it to all three of you this morning. I was notified yesterday evening on a quick call that we expect a settlement to be filed between Montana Dakota Utilities and the Electrical Cooperative, and I would anticipate that we'd probably receive it in the upcoming days. And so for the purposes of moving forward with an order, I would be interested to hear your thoughts on whether that is something you would like to wait and hold off on, or whether we would like to move forward quickly, whether on this next agenda with an order, or even for a subsequent agenda, maybe a few weeks down, have an order for that one.
Well, I guess my initial reaction is if you were contacted as counsel that we have this settlement coming, I would anticipate that it's being done in good faith for us to review. That's just my initial reaction. And I'm happy to hear that there's some harmony going on, some discussion going on between them. As Mr. Christman, Commissioner Christman said very eloquently at the end of the hearing.
I guess my thought on it is as I talked about in the hearing, I think these a lost opportunity payment or whatever it would be called can be a good thing and be beneficial to both sides, for the utility that is adding territory. It can, you know, alleviate any potential for a decision to not get the CPCN. It eliminates the opportunity for appeals from the other side that can drag something out that needs to move relatively quickly, and So I think as long as a settlement is was in reasonable amounts, I'm in favor of them. But in this case, we have always tried our best to move cases along in a reasonable time frame, and this has been a month since the hearing, and I guess after waiting that long, I had pretty well reached my conclusion on the case without one already. So I'm ready to move forward, I guess, anytime something is added to the agenda.
So this is tricky, and I have a lot of thoughts on this case and this issue as a whole. So I guess I'll just do my best to try to share those. I mean, as the law exists and the considerations today, this case is fairly straightforward, and I too could probably make a decision on it quickly. And I don't want these cases to be dragged out. So that's really important for there to be kind of a process in place that's decisive, speedy, responsive to the needs of industry. At the same time, as I said in the hearing, this generally, not just this case, but this load in general, this type of load, is unlike anything we've ever seen before. It is very different. We've never gotten loads of this size that acted this way before. So I don't believe that we have the proper framework with which to fully consider these loads moving forward in the broader public interest. I mean, I think we can look at them from the interests of individual utilities, and it's obvious they're good for whoever gets them. But as it relates to the broader public interest that I feel that the commission needs to be looking at and considering in this case and in all cases, I think we need a framework that provides for not winners and losers, but everyone to share in this massive new electric load. I think it's, obviously it's good for the investor-owned utilities and for the co-ops. It's huge. They're serving in areas that are hard to serve, few customers, expensive, and for the long-term interests of the state, that's a public interest that I think we're obligated to consider as well. So from that standpoint, I like that the parties are talking and trying to come up with some sort of a shared beneficiary or shared approach to this. Where things go wrong is if there's a situation or it's set up in a way that one party can hold the other party hostage. We can't have that kind of a situation where there, is everyone's, one party's holding out for the maximum amount, or, the parties get too vested in what they can absolutely get. So I think what I would welcome is the parties in their negotiations here to offer us their best stab at a framework they think is fair, that is, may provide a solution to this case, but also sort of the seeds for how we can look at these moving forward long term, because it would be easy to decide just based on the factors of the law, and maybe the parties will decide to go that route, but I think that we would be missing out on an opportunity to use this new economic opportunities, this new engine to affect the broader public good in North Dakota, and I think we're obligated to try to find that. So in line with what Randy said, I think that any sort of a proposal needs to be reasonable. It needs to be timely because we could move forward without it, and it needs to be fair. So those would be kind of the parameters that I'm thinking of. And I do appreciate that the parties are thinking about this and working on it, as Commissioner Haugenhoffert said.
So I guess what I hear, at least just from a general scheduling standpoint, is that we would like to wait until the subsequent settlement is filed within at least a reasonable amount of time to take a look at it. I will note that...
Jack, I would entertain going through the order, though. I don't think that... I think there would be value in that.
Okay.
Just talking through kind of some of the factors and the way it's been proposed.
Sure, absolutely. And this is the order that Victor put together. I will have some...
Before we proceed, Jack, can I want a clarification. If we're going to ascertain that, I think we're all would expect reasonable, timely, and fair. With their communication with you last night, did they indicate, I want to focus a little bit on the timely, when they expected us to hear, as we said, we're ready to make it, I think we're ready to make a decision, and we don't want to hold this up. When can we expect to hear from them?
I know that the parties have unexecuted agreements as of today, but with that in mind, that means it's essentially, the agreement is been drafted. It just is a matter of execution at this point. So I would be shocked if we did not receive it before next Wednesday.
Okay.
That's helpful.
So that would give us time to consider it and have a decision at the next commission meeting if things are, you know, if we, depending on what it is.
Right.
Right. Okay. I guess I'm comfortable with that as long as we're moving things along in a timely fashion.
Okay.
And meeting reasonable and fair. Absolutely.
Sure. Well, I'm not going to, I will not extend deep into the minutia of this, but I'll just generally walk through at least what staff had drafted up and, as it relates to this. Of course, we went through the factors individually. Ultimately, the order provided that the Montana Code Utility should be granted a CPCN. First off, who does the customer prefer electric service from? Which, as we know from case law, is the smallest factor of any of them. And it was Montana Code Utilities, as is specified in the hearing. The second factor isn't really a one that specifies a winner or a loser. It's a what electric suppliers are operating in the general area. Those are the two that are in the area, DV, Dakota Valley, and Montana Code Utilities. The third one, what electric supply lines exist within the at least a two-mile radius location of the location to be constructed and served. Victor did a very good job of actually walking through all the different infrastructure in the area, the multiple transmission lines where things would be serviced from, Dakota Valley Electric's single-phase line as well, and the lengths of extensions to the facilities. Ultimately, the conclusion from staff was that Montana Code Utilities had the larger network for service to that location in the area. The next one is what customers are served by electric suppliers within a two-mile radius of the location to be served. Montana Code Utility had 77. Dakota Valley Electric had 15 within the two-mile radius. You know, when you're looking at the what number of customers are served by the electric suppliers within at least a two-mile radius, this is one that I tend to, at least in my mind, not necessarily give ultimately as much weight as some of the other ones from the standpoint is it really depends on where those customers are located at. And so, but ultimately, if that was a factor that you were going to give some weight, even a small amount of weight, that ultimately was provided to Montana Code Utilities.
I agree that one has to be, I think, looked at each case kind of individually.
Right.
If within a 2 mile radius, there's a large number and a high percentage of them are also within 1 mile or a half mile, that's a lot different than if there's a big number, but they're almost all, you know, 1.9 miles away or something like that.
Absolutely. It's more of a qualitative than a quantitative, I think, evaluation.
Better way to explain it.
Right. What differences are there between the electric suppliers to serve the area with respect to reliability of service? And this one was provided to Montana Code Utilities, of course, not because Dakota Valley Electric would provide unreliable service. Really, the finding was that both would be able to adequately and reliably serve that location as they do based on the metrics that they provided. However, there was the aspect of line lengths and so forth for faults that came into consideration. Again, that one maybe could go either way, quite honestly, that to a degree that could be a wash as well depending on how you look at the facts of the case. Moving on to the next one, which of the available electric suppliers will be able to serve the location in question more economically is still earn an adequate return on investment? I think it came down to who could serve it more economically, not who would get an adequate return on investment. Obviously, both of them would. It would be a benefit to both of them. That's why we're here. Ultimately, though, I think the economics of largely with the cost of extension and so forth, but also looking at the rates from the hearing, what was provided during the hearing, staff felt that it went to Montana Code of Utilities. Next is which suppliers electric extended electric service would be best served orderly and economic development of electric service in the area. If I remember correctly, the staff, as it was currently drafted, says it'd be Montana Code Utilities. I think that might be one thing that is worth discussing and looking at if we move forward, changing that provision, because ultimately, the extension of facilities can subsequently allow to upgrades in other areas. Code of Iowa Electric did discuss that, and so we may want to weigh and balance that before a final order a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Would approval of the application result in wasteful duplication investment or service? It didn't go for either of them. It said both of them would not result in wasteful duplication of service or investment. There's no probability that it will, in the near future, that it will be within the corporate limits of municipality in the foreseeable future. For the next one, will service by either electric suppliers unreasonably interfere with the other? And both of them would not result in unreasonable interference as a result of this. And so depending on how you look at this, just based upon the factors, if you're going numerically, and again, not from the matter of qualitative benefits to the area, Montana Code of Utilities would either probably, based upon those factors, be 3 to 5 factors positive in their favor, with ultimately the findings, none of them really, as a result of this order currently, would go in favor of Dakota Valley Electric. So the result would be findings that and conclusions of law and order that would ultimately grant the certificate to Montana Code of Utilities.
So when you look at these factors, Jack, what do you think is which factor gets the most weight?
The two, and again, there's nothing specified in the law really presenting that, but if I would really be thinking as a policymaker maybe in your position, I would tend to err and probably the whole point of this is orderly development and, mm-hmm. and preventing wasteful duplication of services. The ones that really err more in that direction, reliability would be an important one as well. So I would say that some of the ones for example, which supplier would best serve orderly and economic development of the area, I would think hypothetically if there's one that would ultimately maybe, for example, be comparable, maybe slightly more expensive, and I'm just thinking in the hypothetical world, but ultimately would be better suited for service in the area for other qualitative benefits. If there's a lot of future growth in the area, that may be one thing that you take into consideration to kind of weigh and balance in your ultimate your conclusion. Wasteful duplication of services is a clear one. I know we've discussed in the past the impact of checkerboarding as well on facilities in the area. But I think ultimately, if you take a look at the factors, I did not, at least from what was provided at the hearing, hear much that would require us to depart from providing Montana Dakota's utilities, the CPCN, from this,
mm-hmm.
from this application.
If you look at the factor number 7, the best served orderly, are you looking at it as from a timeline, what they already have set up, they're kind of in front of the eight ball versus Dakota Valley?
the orderly development of the area, are you saying?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I would not say anything that's currently existing. For example, who's serving what location at this point in time is what we'd be looking at. In my sense, that would be the broader development of the area. And that's why I guess I differ a little bit from Victor, and that's something we hadn't had an opportunity to discuss prior to this work session. That may be something that may be worth considering, a little different perspective on that one.
And that's something I've not thought about from this perspective in past cases. But so when we think about what would serve orderly economic development in the future in the area, and then to use this case as the example, MDU is pretty much able to do what they're seeking to do because they have their substation there. They just need a CPCN. So mm-hmm. I don't know if it changes much for anybody else unless this orderly economic development means, I can't remember what number they said, they expect like 50 employees around there, and so the community grows and growth causes economic. Is that the economic development? Or is it the fact that in almost every case, if you went with the one that has to do the most upgrading, mm-hmm. in this case, Dakota Valley would have to build some three-phase transmission.
Right.
And thus, all along their new build, mm-hmm. you would have enhanced the potential for economic development along there for both something else to set up or for farmers that are on the system. So it almost seems like if you're not counting the fact that some project brings employees, and I guess either, no matter who served it, that would happen. It almost seems like enhancing economic development is always going to go to the one who has to build the most, and that seems kind of backwards.
Right, and I guess that would be a departure from how we've definitely looked at it. What I'm saying is, which providing electric service in the area would benefit the local economics and like economic growth in the development of that area. So it's not who would spend the most on infrastructure from that standpoint. It would not be who brings in the most employees to that locality. It would be who is best served, would best serve that locality with their electrical service.
I think, too, that's why it's important to consider those together, that one with the wasteful duplication.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't want to be duplicating what's already there. And because it's expensive, that's the whole reason why we regulate utilities, because the infrastructure is expensive and it's burdensome for the public to have to duplicate this expensive infrastructure. So.
Yep, and that ultimately is one of the main cruxes of the TIA case.
Mm-hmm. It does get to be complicated when you, like Randy's saying, the additional infrastructure that Dakota Valley would add would facilitate economic development in that area, you mm-hmm. know? So that's where it gets to be more fuzzy.
And then I think the part, and I'm curious for advice on thoughts on how much value to put into this, but the testimony from the company was that based on the offer that they'd received from Dakota Valley, if the decision wasn't for MDU, they weren't coming at all.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so all the economic development would just stop.
Right.
Well,
I don't know what weight to give that, but it wasn't counted.
But then they went on to state MDU that they had other people that were inquiring too, as far as data centers. So, you know, but then they just said that with no names of companies or anything either. But mm-hmm. so potential economic development ongoing, probably based on their testimony. I don't.
Well, that's one of the things that makes this different than any other type of a customer. You know, traditionally TIA cases have been over loads that are maybe 10 or 20 megawatts would be big. This is just, you know, outsizes that. It's just kind of blows everything out.
Outsize the cities.
I mean, what was Dakota Valley's peak load? Was it 80 megawatts or 50? I can't remember, but it was, you know, much, much smaller than what this load would be. So,
A couple of things that I did want to generally note is in relation to the settlement agreement to this is settlement agreements are not something that is specified that we look at for a public convenience and necessity case. It's not one of the factors that we've been provided to be to guide us in, you know,
what do
ultimately.
You mean? Like we can't entertain them? Is that
what
you're saying?
Well, I'm saying that it would certainly be a departure for looking at outside agreements outside of really who's the best person to serve this location. And I know we had some discussions as well as, I guess, what the appropriateness of us being a mechanism where to subsequently force, I guess, maybe a transfer of funds from one entity to another that's not actually providing the service to the area, whether that would be a co-op or an IOU. But I will say we do have an existing case open currently as well with Montana Dakota Utilities with the electric service agreement that would be in front of us, and that's a rate proposal that if there is some sort of settlement agreement, whether that is included in this or not, that is going to be subsequently, that's going to impact that case as well. Mm-hmm. Depending on how that settlement probably falls out, and I generally have an idea of the terms of it, and terms I can express in an open meeting. And I don't want to get too deep into it as well, even outside the meeting until it's ultimately filed. That may result in advocacy staff requesting to be appointed in that case, depending on the rate impacts. And then we also do have an intervener in that case as well, Marathon, who may have some thoughts as well. So even if it is not addressed in this, that if there is a concept of moving and changing rates and the appropriateness of service and who ultimately is burdened with that, the change in rates, there may be some thoughts on that in the subsequent proceeding too.
Well, I think Julie, you kind of hit on this, and I just very briefly touched on the beginning. It seems to me this assumption, until we see differently, always is that settlement agreements are things that companies are planning, even outside of this case, are reasonable until we see otherwise. And so these companies deal with us all the time, and they know that just and reasonable is a big part of what we do here. And so at this point, I presume that what they would settle on would be reasonable, and someone might complain otherwise, but until I see or hear something different, I guess I'm presuming that a settlement between two parties probably would be reasonable because they know it's going to end up here. We're going to have to deal with those dollars in the end.
Right. Under the presumption that the settlement agreement would result in Dakota Valley Electric, I guess, withdrawing their objection to this, we'd probably base our PC&N not upon that settlement but upon the withdrawal of the objection and what's providing the record. That's how I wouldn't be intending to draft it. Of course, that subsequent settlement impacts will be part of the next case.
Yeah.
That's how I would probably, that's how I functionally place them in boxes and as I process them. If you guys feel otherwise, I'm certainly be open to that. And I guess just going back to the beginning, to the initial statement, it sounds like we would like to wait to hold off until that settlement is filed before we move forward with anything.
We, I think I'm okay with that as long as it's not open-ended. I don't want them messing around for, not messing around. I don't want this to take a really, really long time.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like I said, I'd kind of, as a week or two ago already, I kind of, in my own mind, concluded that there wasn't going to be in a settlement anymore, and kind of figured out where I thought I was going to be on the case just as it was brought to us.
Well, staff will continue over the next few days to clean up this order, and as things get filed, we will follow up as well for any changes that need to be made.
And so for my understanding, what you're contemplating then would be an order similar to what you walked us through here, but acknowledging that the objection has been withdrawn.
Yes. Right. Yep. Mm-hmm. With the cleanup, with the minute changes that we may want to have some discussion on the factors, then issuing the order.
Correct.
Okay.
In terms of the... go ahead, Sherry.
No, go ahead, Jules.
No, you go. Mm-hmm. Mine is on something else.
Okay. I guess I would like, just to piggy off of what Commissioner Christman said, timeliness, or that hopefully we can get something from them by next Wednesday to keep moving this forward.
And then I was just going to say, can we talk about the next case? Probably not.
It is a notice, but functionally we have a general idea.
Well, you know, in terms of the staff's interest in this, reviewing the settlement, obviously that's the key role for them to be looking out at these sorts of things, but they're taking a broad public interest view as well.
Yep, absolutely.
On the rates and any sort of a settlement. So I think that's an important factor too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep, they will. I guess, as we've been directed by the law to evaluate our rates.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
I want to try to assure that we're somewhat on the same page here. When I talked about not wanting this to draw out for a long time, I didn't have a specific date in mind, but then Sherry, you mentioned by next Wednesday, and I'm just wondering with all the legislative things that are on our plates and stuff, now getting this in and they haven't even filed it yet, I'm wondering if it's reasonable to think that we might have this final order and have had time for us to review it when it's finalized for next Wednesday's meeting already, or are we talking about more like the 8th of February or what?
I guess I was going off of what Jack said at the beginning when he was consulted last night on when anticipating hearing from them, and he thought by next Wednesday hearing
settlement
something.
Agreement.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Having a settlement filed. Yeah.
But not yeah, for so us not, to have an order next
no.
Wednesday.
That's correct.
Not if we're waiting for the settlement agreement. It would be a little bit tight.
Right. Looking at the settlement agreement, Randy.
Okay.
But that being said, there may be an opportunity for a special meeting sometime in the next week.
Yep.
And that's something we want to consider towards the end for maybe multiple cases.
Can
keep that in mind.
Always open to that.
I wouldn't object.
And with that in mind, this is on the scheduling matter, so I'm pretty comfortable talking about this. The electric service agreement, may be worthwhile to consider adding that on for scheduling as well to make sure that's moving forward too on the next agenda.
I think that's a good idea.
Okay.
Yeah. Agreed. You all right with that, Sherry? Your portfolio.
Repeat it then.
Jack was suggesting that the electric service agreement be scheduled and that we be moving forward with that too fairly quickly.
Right. Especially in light of that we have an intervener, it would be good to...
We'll have a hearing. Scheduling the hearing for that is what you're talking
yep.
about.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that'll be noticed.
Yes, perfect.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We can, if we need to move that to from a formal to a informal, we could take that action too, depending on ultimately where staff and all the parties are.
What's the number of that, do you know?
You know, off the top of my head, I don't know. I can email it to you after the work session if that works.
Okay.
Thanks for the recap.
I'm sensing conclusion here. Does anyone have anything to add on this MDU applied blockchain case? Okay. This work session is concluded. Thank you, everyone. Good seeing you again, Sherry.
Yep.
See you later.
Bye.